This is one of the most famous fighter groups in history. And in my opinion, this was a very bad part of our country's history, a very shameful part. And then on the other hand, it was a story of triumph over adversity. So it has a good side and a bad side. We're going to hear today from Dr. Brian Smith, who is the president and director of the National Museum of the Tuskegee Airmen. And as you can see, some of those guys are arriving right now. I see my friend, Colonel Charles McGee. Also, we have on stage here, so to speak, with us Brad Lang. Brad is the son of a Tuskegee Airman. Brad is a Delta Airlines pilot, and also he gets to fly the Mustang. And I'm so jealous, I don't know what to say. Let's start off with you, Brian. Can you just explain what your museum is all about?
Sure. The Tuskegee Airmen National Museum has three goals, and it's to keep the history of the Tuskegee Airmen accurate and alive, and we do that with this aircraft behind me. This is a North American T-6 that actually served at Tuskegee Army Airfield. It was delivered there in 1943 and served until the end of the war. The museum's second goal is to promote aviation in young people. So we have several programs that take a student from its first flight through the Young Eagles program of EAA all the way to a pilot license. We have about five students in the last 20 years that are now flying for the major airlines. And the third goal of our program is just to be good community neighbors and promote, you know, the health and welfare of the United States of America.
Thank you, Brian. Brad? Tell us what your dad did.
My father, Donald W. Lang Sr., was actually at Tuskegee towards the end of the war. He would have been involved in the 477th Bomber Group. Technically, he was a master sergeant. He worked with the base commander, Noel Parrish. And through his association with the Airmen, he really helped myself and my brother set high goals and standards for the rest of our lives. And as it just happened, I got into aviation as a professional pilot. And more importantly, a little bit later, got involved with a very unique and special aircraft, the one you see to my right, the Commemorative Air Force P-51C Model Mustang. And our mission, of course, is to use the airplane as an educational tool. We also combine that with another great educational asset, the Rise Above exhibit, which is about half a mile south of here. So we're here to keep the story alive and to try to inspire lots of folks with overcoming adversity and also sharing great stories.
Brian, would you introduce our late arrivals here, please?
Sure. I'll start on my right, your left, I guess. We have William Thompson, who is a cadet at Tuskegee Moton Field and Tuskegee Army Airfield. He got up to flying the T-6 before he fell ill and was washed out of the program. Hal Brown is an excellent fighter pilot, flew P-51s, and actually had a bead on a German jet, but the jet pulled away and he couldn't get the bullets to hit the target. What was that, sir?
Bullets were slow.
The bullets were just too slow. And next to him is Colonel McGee. Colonel McGee is the... I see he may not need an introduction. But he's got the record of flying the most sorties in a single-engine aircraft than any other United States Air Force person ever.
Did you hear that, folks? Colonel McGee has more combat fighter time than anybody in the history of the U.S. Air Force.
And beyond that, he is my mentor. He's been mentoring me for many years, Colonel McGee. And next is Bob Ashby. Bob Ashby was involved with the 477th Bomber Group. And the thing I like about Bob Ashby, he fell in love with aviation during the war, and he did aviation the rest of his life, flying jets, commercial. And that's great. I hope to be involved in aviation the rest of my life. Next to him is James Harvey, America's first top gun.
So
Say that again. Say that again.
James Harvey, America's first Top Gun. In 1949, the Air Force reconvened the gunnery meets they had prior to the war. All 12 squadrons active at the time were invited. The 332nd took three pilots, Alva Temple, James Harvey, and Harry Stewart, and they came out on top. They beat all the other Air Force squadrons at the time. They're the first Top Gun, James Harvey. And next to James Harvey is, he's from Detroit, Washington Ross. He flew 63 missions in a P-51 escorting bombers. And he loves the B-25. I ask him, does he want to fly in the T-6? He says, no, that you got to land too often and get gas. I want a B-25 where I can just go. So that's your crew today, Ed.
I'll tell you, Dan, that's my brother.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Anyway, as we look up here, let's see, we got 9 pilots. Does anybody see any difference in anybody up here? Well, you know what? In 1941, there was a lot of idiots in Washington, D.C. that did see a difference between me and these guys. And let me give you an overview of what these gentlemen did. The Tuskegee Airmen flew 15,533 sorties. They shot down 112 enemy aircraft. They destroyed 150 on the ground. They damaged 148. 66 Tuskegee Airmen paid the ultimate, killed in action. And they won 96 Distinguished Flying Crosses. It was called an experiment back then. A lot of people in Washington felt like that colored people, as they were called then, or Negroes, that's where the derogatory N-word came from, could not fly airplanes. They didn't have the mental capacity to do that. And then the famous 333rd Fighter Group was formed and the 447th Bomb Group, and they distinguished themselves in combat. They first flew overseas in Operation Torch, which was the invasion of Africa. They deployed with the P-40 aircraft in Africa, and then they fought in Sicily and Italy, and they ended up in Italy with P-51s. Along the way, they flew P-39s and P-47s, and had it not been for Eleanor Roosevelt, the First Lady, they might not have come into existence. They also hold a distinction of shooting down 3 German jets in one day, led by their famous leader, who I want to talk about, General Benjamin O. Davis. Go ahead, Brian.
Benjamin O. Davis. I really don't feel worthy to expound upon Davis. I was wondering if we could get one of the airmen to say what Davis meant to them.
Absolutely. Charles?
I'd be glad to. I say, for those that don't know, General Davis, at the time, was a captain when the program started. He's a graduate of West Point in 1936 and said he wanted to fly, and the Army turned him down because they had no black units. He became the leader. He went through training in the first class. And, well, folks, there are 5 phases to the Tuskegee experience. The first one was that experiment, 99th Pursuit Squadron. He became the commander of the squadron. Well, they were attached to white groups, and the commander said, well, they should be patrolling Liberia. Well, you go look at your map of Africa, where Liberia is and where were the Germans at the time. Well, 99th's going to need replacements, so training continued at Tuskegee, and the 3 additional fighter squadrons came. Second phase of the experience, 100th, 301st, and 302nd squadrons, with all of their necessary support, by the way, folks. So 992 pilots out of the program, but probably 12,000, 13,000 people totally involved because of segregation at the time. When I graduated, the instructor said, they ought to have a bomber program for you guys because I think you'd make a good bomber pilot. He didn't know phase 3 of the Tuskegee experience followed about 3 months later when the 477th Bomb Group, with the 4 squadrons and all of their support, entered the training. Well, when the war was over, some of you may have heard Double V. Double V was established or started by a newspaper that said we were fighting for two victories, victory over Germany and victory over racism here in America. 477 Bomb Group, not Red Tails, didn't get into combat because they dropped a big bomb in the Pacific. Training ended, but they fought the battle because the base commander to their one of their training bases wanted to maintain segregation. Contrary to Army regulations, a number of the officers and men of the unit were under arrest, but hearing there proved Colonel Selway wrong, but the Army didn't change the policy. So another phase of the experience came with the war over in Europe. They formed the 477th Composite Group, keeping two of the B-25 squadrons, reactivating that first squadron, the 99th. Army still didn't change their policy, so what do we do with this group? We had, they opened Lockburn Air Base, now Rickenbacker, near Columbus, Ohio. And when training ended in 46 at Tuskegee, those of us there were sent to Lockburn Air Base. Army still didn't change the policy, but our United States Air Force was born. We separated the air and ground phases, and the Air Force, in their personnel studies, determined we need to integrate. They were supported tremendously by that president said the buck stops here, Harry Truman. He issued an executive order mandating that all of the services should integrate. Army still did well. The Air Force said, we will. And you met one of those top guns of May 1949, but the Air Force carried out their intent by closing Lockburn Air Base in the 1st of July of 1949. Because that composite group was deactivated and the 332nd Fighter Group had been reactivated flying that P-47 in, but we were scattered around the world. And if you folks wish, you know, segregation is an order and a declaration. Integration is the action. We were a part of that action scattered around the world. It did take the civil rights action in
Colonel McGee.
472.
I wanted to get you to say what Colonel Davis meant to the group.
Oh, Colonel Davis was the right. I'm sorry. I got off track, didn't I?
That's okay. We needed that little history.
To me, Colonel Davis was the right man at the right time. He wasn't the top pilot we had, but he was the leader, and he let us Rice second and first lieutenants know what the task was. Escort the bombers so that they can get home. Stick with them. He said, I'll court-martial the pilot, goes happy hunting. I don't have time to tell him what happy hunting means, but hey, we believed him, so we Red Tails became the premier escort group for 15th Tactical Air Force.
Right. See, I would summarize Colonel Davis after hearing stories about him for 30 years. He's the kind of man who would ask his secretary to find you a new job. He would call you into the office and fire you, and by the time that conversation had ended, the secretary would have a new job for you to go to. He would say, you're not unworthy to work, you're just unworthy to work here. He was that kind of stern, firm, but fair man.